There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And I appreciate the text from you. Yeah, so, and Don had asked just a... Maybe other people have the question. Yeah, Football Fridays with Feinbaum is back. So Paul's on with Dan and Dalton, as always. And you know, prep sports reports there. And, of course, the Auburn football. But, yeah, the big announcement. High school football with UMS on Friday nights here at FM Talk 106.5. And, yeah, it's part of you know, kind of what I wanted for this radio station from the beginning. It's just all the different things that make up our lives. And it's news, you know, it's opinion and so many things during the week. It's also how-to shows. It's, you know, hey, how did the kids at the, you know, the high school that I follow do that on a Saturday morning or the outdoors or my man Bill Finch and a tour through the state of Alabama in the southeast and our gardens and yards. All that is by design. And having this announcement here to have high school football on Friday nights, I love it. And by the way, Chad, one of the many texts I got, Chad said, I never thought about in-stadium listening for high school. That's awesome. Luckily, we did. Yeah, the app, you know, it was real fancy back in the day, right, how you had to do in-stadium listening when you go to college games. But it's just as easy as downloading the FM Talk 106.5 app and taking it with you to the ball game. So enjoy that. All right, without further ado, he is environmental journalist, author, filmmaker, bon vivant, pretty dang good speckled trout fisherman, and a whole lot more. He's also my buddy Ben Raines joining us now. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm good, man. So what's the report? What you been doing?
Well, I've been really fine.
That right.
The most exciting thing that happened is I almost cut the end of my thumb off with my trolling motor mount. Had a trip last week, and I nosed the boat into the bank like I always do. Mm-hmm. And there happened to be a stump covered in vines, and I didn't see it. And I drove the trolling motor into it in such a way that it flexed and it busted the mount. I didn't even know it until I got home when I... It all fell apart. You know, these pieces started falling out of it.
It's not good.
And so, you know, I have a hand-controlled trolling motor, and the mount for it was $600. The motor was fine. You know, so I
that
took
mount
it off
is
the mount was $600. I could not believe.
Was that that Tarova? Is that the Minn Kota?
Yeah. It's the
I could have found
Fortrex or the Riptide.
Yeah. I think you have a Riptide. I could have found that mount for used, but you didn't call me.
I tried to. I went to Fox's Trolling Motors
where
they
didn't have
a huge
one?
Stack of them. So he was shutting down the business. And so the junk man came and bought, he had like, I don't know, probably 600 mounts in a stack. They're all aluminum, you know, and the junk man bought them all like the week before I got out there. But Fox's is still open. He's now selling it to John, one of his longtime workers, and he's going to work. Vernon's going to stay a little while and help him get his feet under him. So Fox's trolling motor is still open. The word went all around, you know, all my trolling motor buddies, they were shutting down. I've been going there since his dad was there. You know, I started going there in 99. So I hated it if it disappeared.
Well, good. Good to know they're still going to be there. Same location, everything.
Same location.
Okay,
everything's
good.
The same. The same wonderful time warp experience to walk in there.
It is indeed. Hey, I want to, like, your time on the Delta this summer, water-wise, you know, one of the discussions that's come up over the years is the amount of fresh water in the summertime, you know, did you notice anything different this year?
It's longer than this year. I would say.
Right, I'm just saying it's been tracking for a while. I just didn't know this year if you're seeing changes compared to the last couple.
It was muddier, I would say, much later. It's still kind of muddy now. You know, the water didn't clear up as much. But the big change is what's missing since the year we had the snow.
And that?
And the biggest thing I've found that's missing is the lotus. There is probably 3% as much lotus as there was the year before the snow.
Interesting.
I said three. Yeah. So what happened, I believe, like little baddie, big baddie, they're, you know, the year before the snow, I have, you know, drone footage. The entire lake surface was covered in lotus. You know, the big pads, the whole lake, the entire thing. And then the snow came, and remember we had the north winds, and the bay was famously low. You know, you could walk out almost to the middle of the bay on dry ground. Well, so what that meant was that was the same thing up in the Delta. So all that snow was sitting right on top of the mud where the
lotus didn't have the protection of the water.
Buried.
Okay.
Right. And I think it froze them. And so last summer, we had about a third as much as the year before the snow. But this summer, literally like 3%. And I think what happened after it got the snow damage, then I think the following summer, we had 4 days in the teens.
Oh, I do remember. Well, yeah.
I think they were probably already kind of weakened from the previous year, some that had made it. So anyway, this year is the least lotus I've seen. And I found some beautiful patches, you know, for people going with me. In fact, we're going tomorrow. I still got two spots on that trip for tomorrow morning. We're going to see lotus. You know, I've got some patches that are beautiful and you get the whole experience and we eat the seeds and, you know, there's a bunch of flowers. But we're talking like literally maybe 3% of little baddie is covered versus 100% 2 years ago. Huge change.
It'll bounce back. Exactly. But that is a change. But you thought and mud wise or muddy water wise, it was more this year.
Yeah. You know, I think every year since the, you know, they changed the permits for the Coosa River Dam. So they have to release more water all summer long than they've had to do in 40 years. You know, they had a 30-year permit. And so that permit was ruled illegal in about 2015 or so, 16, somewhere in there, I think. Mm-hmm. And so the new permit requires them to release fresh water steadily all summer to keep the Coosa River functioning and to keep it flowing. You know, that they called them the dead pools because the lakes on the Coosa River had so little flow that the oxygen levels would drop out and all the fish would start dying. And so that was what they used to force Alabama Power, you know, to do better water management to keep oxygen levels up in all those Coosa River lakes. And what that has meant in effect is there's more fresh water coming down year round. They used to hold it all back to use to make electricity.
So we're maybe
July.
Seeing more of a normal. So that discussion we've had over the last few years about, hey, you know, the it seems muddier than you know, for longer in the Tensaw or the Blakely or something like that is part of that. Very good.
Exactly. We're returning to a more normal state. We had all gotten used to the incredible fall fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that persisted up until past Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I do know.
And that was because of them holding all that water back. So it was saltier, so the shrimp would stay up there. Now, the other issue is the Tentom Waterway, the man-made canal that connects the Tennessee mm-hmm. River to the Tombigbee River. That, I've read a bunch of studies, that has always put more fresh water into our system than they expected, into the bay. Than they predicted when they designed that thing.
Do you remember when you weren't back here, maybe when they did a big, I mean, I still have the, I guess it's a magazine, like a big, it looked like maybe a Rand McNally Atlas they put out celebrating the Tentom and all the things that were going to happen. Back then, it was a big deal back then. And, you know, and now to look at it, it's
none of the barge traffic happened. The loopers use it. The people
they
you know,
do
traveling.
Yeah, I know. We were just watching loopers the other night on YouTube. Yeah, because I may do that.
That thing is going to wreck Alabama's rivers. We need to get that shut as fast as possible. We now have the warning signs at the boat ramps on the Delta, looking for the big head carp and the mirror carp. I think the Asian jumping carp, because that is the only pathway for those carp to get into our rivers, and it's going to happen. You know, they're spreading from the Mississippi, and the Tennessee runs into the Mississippi.
Those yeah, because they're in the Mississippi, in the Ohio. Aren't they in the Ohio
exactly.
now, too? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to end up here, unless we close the tent up. And I am, this is one of my new battle cries. It is idiotic to let the most diverse river system in North America be contaminated with those carp because of this stupid waterway that was supposed to open us up for more commerce, more barge traffic, which no longer exists. I mean, this needs to be something that, our environmental groups in Alabama get on board. We have the most diverse river system, biologically diverse river system in the nation that we get to use. Imagine what's going to happen if you're out there and you have to have a windshield on your boat to hide behind so you don't get killed by getting hit in the head with a carp.
Yeah, and that does, I mean, absolutely. If y'all don't know what we're talking about, go YouTube those videos, those jokers. I mean, you think
incredible.
Of mullet, you think of mullet, you know, if you're running in the Delta at night, for example, and you're running a Q-beam, you'll have mullet, you know, jump in the boat. But that's also just a mullet. These carp are way bigger.
A pound and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, these things are 10 pounds, and they're leaping 6 feet up in the air. It's crazy. They shoot them now. Have you seen that?
I've watched
the
bow fishing.
The boat with the shotgun.
Well, I've watched the bow fishing ones,
shotgun.
Too. Well, the bow one, it was, I was like, that's a challenge. But
Yeah, it would be a challenge. Hitting a flying fish while you're running 30 miles an hour, that would be a challenge.
For sure. I just don't know if I want to trade off. No, I know I don't want to trade off everything. I'll just go up to the Ohio River and do that. Also, while we're talking about water, you know, it came out so back and forth this last week. I got a notice from the Corps. That they were, you know, in paraphrasing it, they were misunderstanding them or something like that.
Yeah,
but,
that crazy press release.
Yeah, and the thin layer placement, it's very, I want to point out people so we don't rewrite history, that it was the Corps of Engineers that said there was beneficial use and then there was thin layer placement. They themselves, and then at some point a year or two ago, they somehow they pulled out the wall and migrated thin layer placement into beneficial use. We can have debates here, but I just want y'all to know that did happen. That is a fact.
And it is a bad deal for us.
100%.
There is no beneficial use of spreading loose mud on the floor of the bay. The floor of the bay is an active biological entity. You know, it has all kinds of marine worms that are percolating, just like earthworms on land that are digging in the soil and or the sediments and moving nutrients up and down. It's not like throwing dirt on a dirt patch in your yard. You know, you are burying a living organism, or billions of organisms. But the idea that it's in any way a benefit to our natural systems is just preposterous.
You know, it's frustrating about it too, is, you know, we just talked about the muddy water, and the reason we have a delta, y'all, the reason we have the marshes, we do have sediment, we have ground up, you know, Appalachian mountains that get brought down here, and the water gets slow and it drops out particles and builds new land. And people say, well, yeah, they're just doing the same thing. It's the difference between, I don't know what the current, a human being should have 2,000 calories a day. That's a healthy thing. And for our delta, we do have to have sediment come in. But, of course, it would be north of where they're doing their work. But if you ate 50,000 calories a day, there'd be a documentary about you. You know, that's is sediment part of our system, but not that much.
Yeah, we already have too much coming in from the rivers.
Correct.
I mean, that's the biggest threat we've got going up in the river systems, is the bottom getting buried in mud, just like they're trying to do in the bay. You know, they covers up the mussels and snails and things on the river bottom that are, you know, keystone species for those freshwater aquatic systems. So if you go to a creek that's just had a clear cut next to it, you'll see it's totally buried in mud and there are no rocks and there are no fish. You know, that. So we have too much sediment, and them adding to the problem in the bay to save a few bucks is just outrageous.
Yeah, and be honest with you that we had a bad part of that, but the industry has gotten better. I mean, y'all go fly over Alabama, you'll see the SMZs, the streamside management zones, those buffers around the drainages, and they don't always do it perfectly, but builders and silt fences. So those things have been done to mitigate the amount of mud getting in the system, more to a natural, but then we're going to okay this unnatural adding of mud in the bay, and it's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, it's corrupt. And here's the issue. We don't have the same sort of coverage of those kind of issues we used to have. You know, we had dedicated reporters. I was the guy who followed every core permit. That was part of my job description at the Press Register as the environment reporter. Every 2 weeks, I was supposed to go through all the new core permits that were issued or that were out for comment and write about the ones that merited, you know, challenge. Nobody was doing that job when this beneficial use placement happened. And that's how it slipped through the cracks. Because, you know, the way our media landscape used to work, the print reporters had more time to develop big stories, and then the TV reporters would follow them. And then the environmental groups would follow the two groups of reporters, TV and print, and radio. We should put radio in there.
Mm-hmm. Dang right.
The system is broken. You know, Lanyap is trying to do its best, but, you know, AL.com has really given up the ghost. Lanyap has more reporters in Mobile than AL.com does.
It does a lot better job.
Yeah, and so we are suffering for that. Our environment is suffering from that lack of attention. And, you know, that's why I kind of have been on this kick of telling people to join all the local environmental groups. You know, don't just join Baykeeper. Join Baykeeper and join the Coastal Foundation and join SALT. And you know, it's $30-$40 to join or whatever. But those groups need to have enough horsepower behind them in terms of members to get respect from political leaders and to be well-staffed enough to educate the media. You know, that it's changed. The media used to educate the environmental groups in our community. Now the equation is shifting the other way. Is Baykeeper leading this charge on the mud dumping? And hats off to them. You know, that's fantastic. They've done a great job with that. They've done a great job bringing public awareness to that issue. You know, their videos they've put out and things have been really good. As far as making the public understand, you know, what we're talking about, because it's out in the middle of the bay. That's how they got away with it so long, because the only people who saw it happened to be riding by the dredge, you know, and most people wouldn't. They'd avoid the dredge because they're scared of them.
That's for sure. All right. Hang on, Ben. We're coming right back. More with my buddy Ben Raines right here on Midday Mobile. 251-343-0106.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 128 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Ben Raines. Speaking of which, here, at least one question before the news break from the text line. This is from Don. Don says, quick question for Ben. If you have time, could the lack of surface cooling because of the Lotus caused some of the inland delta lakes to turn over? Yeah, this is what he's talking about. It's a temperature inversion thing. Does happen throughout the year. Do you think it had anything
Well, I don't know, but I have been seeing big clumps of bottom turned upside down on the surface. Floated up. You know, gases get released and these big mats float up. And at first you can't figure out what they are, and then you realize that's what it is, that it's the bottom. And
the bottom doing it, but like just water, you know, there is a natural process, but I think it's way too early because of how warm it is that you'll get turnover lakes.
Little baddies 2 feet deep, like maximum depth.
Yeah, if we get a southwest wind and a high tide.
Exactly. So I don't know. But I will say that you mentioned the tide. Boy, the tides, really, our high tides now, you know, the big tides of the month, man, they are high.
we have bigger ones. We got the September bull tide coming, so.
Yeah. I mean, they are really starting to be noticeably higher. It's a big change.
Hey, on your, just got about 15 seconds here before we go to the news and we'll come back. And, you know, what Ben does on the summertime tours, a lot of showing us what's beneath the surface with his net surveys. How's the shrimp population look?
You know, those are grass shrimp up
right
there.
Right, funny, I like to catch brim. Yeah, so how are they looking?
I catch not as good at the end of the summer. I think they get eaten heartily. You know, beginning spring, I catch tons and tons.
Okay, so the grass shrimp still looking
very few.
Okay, all right. That was absolutely self-serving for my brim fishing, but I do that from time to time. Coming right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And check in with the professor at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Ron, precious metals prices, what are you looking at today?
Right now, gold's at $4,378. It's up $21.92 on the day, and silver's at $65.74, so that's up $1.20 on the day. So doing pretty well. Platinum, palladium are holding strong. And, of course, it's been the same thing all week. One day it drops $20, the next day it goes up $20. I think as long as we're not bombing Iran, everything's fine and dandy for a nice, slow, steady climb on precious metals. So good time to add to your stack.
Yeah, and I always ask you about, like, different ways to buy precious metal. And silver, you're talking about Silver Eagle's got to be one of your most popular.
Oh, yeah, we have a deal on Silver Eagles right now, so we bought quite a few of them, baby. So retail prices, there's no such thing as retail out there, but most people are 10, 15 over spot. We're selling those at 6 over while the surplus lasts. So we got quite a few. So if somebody wants to grab a deal on some Silver Eagles, come on in the shop.
Well, you just you made the case for me to come in to see you, so I appreciate that. I know how to find you, but somebody hasn't been there before. How do they find you?
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can find us on the web at mobilebitcoins.com or just give us a call at the shop at 251-725-1590.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Hey, you too. There goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Continue our conversation with my buddy Ben Raines, environmental journalist, filmmaker, author, bon vivant, speckled trout fisherman, a guy who scoops up grass shrimp to give me a report out there. All these things are part of the, it's on his card and the hats he wears. All right, Ben, a couple things here. I want to get to questions that will be asked on the text line before I go any further. So okay. If somebody wants America's Amazon, somebody wants Underwater Forest, somebody wants Picture Plant, where do they find all this, the films?
So they are posted on my YouTube site, which is called Saving America's Amazon or Save America's Amazon. You can also just Google Ben Raines. You'll find them on there. And I'm actually, I just crossed the 1,000 subscriber threshold on YouTube. So I'm actually going to start putting up a lot of videos now.
Remember, we pushed you over 500 on this show. Remember that? We pushed you.
Yeah, I do. It took me a long time to get here because I haven't really put any other content on there except the documentary. So now I'm going to actually start. I want to kind of go out and do some little mini adventures and post them, but just, you know, messing around in the Delta, not fishing videos like you see so many of, but just like sort of screwing around videos. Well, mm-hmm. That's a bad way to phrase that. messing around in the Delta videos where you go catch stuff in nets or just, you know, walk around, see the birds, the flowers and all that. So I want to try and make I want to make the channel dedicated to helping people save the Delta. You know, I'm really upset right now. I took there's a new IMAX film coming out called American Amazon.
Yeah. Good. I want to hear about
those
this.
Guys went out with me. They went out with me for 3 days. I put them on manatees. I put them in the Lotus. I did everything they wanted. And they stole my title. You know, America's Amazon. They're calling it American Amazon. And they're talking about the whole South. And apparently they're crediting some guy in Florida with coming up with the phrase American Amazon.
And there's people in Mississippi that have been on some podcasts that have stolen it as well. I think I reported that to you. So you need a copyright attorney.
Well, you can't copyright a title. But what I'm upset about is they're taking the uniqueness of Alabama, the most biologically diverse state for aquatic creatures, and our Delta and our most diverse river system, and they're spreading it all over the South and diluting its power as a rallying cry for Alabama. You know, that has brought that phrase, America's Amazon, has brought more attention to Alabama's, you know, natural stuff than just about anything in recent memory, you know, and that I see, because people talk about it, they ask about it, it's on posters now and stuff like that, you know, posters, science kind of posters and stuff. So I'm upset that we're losing, you know, this cool little title for our area, and that it's, you know, I'm really irritated and bummed that they did that, because, you know, the Carolinas, North and South Carolina, they're great places. but they're not diverse like we are. You know?
No, it's
Georgia,
not. It's not
Florida,
the same.
They can't touch our diversity. Mississippi, none of them can come close to us. And so, anyway, I'll get off that.
No, but if you're America's Amazon, we're all America's Amazon. It's everybody.
Exactly. Yeah,
We're talking about people going to see this. Look at the text here from CB Carl, who said, Laura, that's his wife, and I took one of Ben's Clotilda trips. I would safely assume that any trip you take with Ben would be awesome. So let's talk about fall trip. I mean, we've talked about something.
Oh, that's awfully nice.
Yeah, that's very nice. I'm one of those people who have taken your trips before, and I've said this too. As a kid that grew up in the Mobile Tensaw Delta, I learned things with Ben that I didn't know, y'all, and I've spent a lot of time up there. So,
you have.
You get a lot of education there. What are you doing in the fall? What are we going to see?
So Upper Delta trips, I'm signing up people up for those right now. And I'm going to do some other, some of the Barrier Island trips, probably just kind of spur of the moment thing. But right now you can sign up for the Upper Delta trips. And I just love doing those. We hike into the Indian Mounds, which is the largest Indian site on the Gulf Coast. And you get to see how the whole system works. You know, they had canals they dug up there and all that. We hike into one of the giant cypresses, and we see a lot of orchids and stuff, but it's just so beautiful. The first, like the late September to the mid October, there's a massive wildflower bloom in the Delta. You know, the tall ironweed is about to bloom right now. This is 8 foot tall stalks topped with magenta flowers and just huge groups of them. The potato bean vines are growing right now and starting to, and this makes a green bean. Looks like you bought a green bean in the store, but they grow up all over trees and stuff. It's just all these beautiful flowers, the cardinal flowers, the opposite spot leaf daisies, these beautiful little yellow daisies. So I get really excited about those trips. We also find a lot of really cool mushrooms, like chicken of the woods and oyster mushrooms, lion's mane mushrooms. I get really excited about the fall because we've just finished the hot summer. And I try and go every day in October and November on those trips. If I can get booked every day, and it's so much fun.
It's a great time of year. Oh, by the way, we use this as, I know we're doing a radio show on a 50,000 watt FM, but Ben and I used this to communicate. My chanterelles this year were awesome at the farm.
Excellent.
It was awesome.
Excellent.
You start,
awesome.
Yeah, you talk
so,
about
so
the
if
big flowers.
Want to go on the trips,
yeah.
They can go to my website, benrains.org, or they can find me on Facebook. Easy to find me. I would love to take people out. Kids love these trips. Really fun.
You know, talk about the blooms and the flowers going on here. You know, I think about in the longleaf forest, like where I live, this is, we get some show in the spring, but this is our big time. I mean, blazing stars are just going nuts. Yep. You know, we have so many blooming. People come to my house, I want to go see flowers and butterflies. I'll come in the spring. I said, no, come in August and September if you want to see butterflies and flowers. And it seems interesting, that coordination between the butterflies and the flowers this time of year more than anything in the spring.
Well, and we have two big, what they call nectar flows a year. One's in the spring and one's in the fall. And basically all the flowers kind of, you know, it's like they have a union. And they're like, okay, let's all bloom at the same time when we have maximum insect populations.
Mm-hmm.
So end of the summer, you have massive insect populations, all the different pollinators and stuff. Those bugs have been growing, you know, since the spring. And butterflies, all that stuff. And so they're all about. So the flowers are like, okay, there's tons of pollinators. Let's bloom right now when there are all these pollinators. And so that's why we end up with the spring and the fall. And the fall bloom is really, it's really spectacular. I mean, you're exactly right. And if you think about what you see driving around September, October, tons and tons of yellow and tons of purple flowers. I wrote something once about the woods are screaming LSU. I got a lot of angry Alabama fans.
Yeah.
But
count me in.
Those are the colors. Those are the colors you see in the woods, right? Like you mentioned the liatris, the blazing star. It's purple, right?
It is very purple.
What's about to bloom, there are a couple things about to bloom. Like I mentioned, the tall ironweed, it's just starting to bloom right now. It's magenta. And what's about to bloom are the sunflowers, the narrow leaf sunflowers. And, you know, these are the ones you see. They're in these big mounds. They'll be like 5 feet tall. And you're just looking at thousands and thousands of flowers. You saw a bunch of them in the Carnivorous Kingdom documentary, if you watched it. And they're yellow, bright yellow. So they're blooming right now. The beggar ticks are coming out. So that's a white flower with a yellow center, you know, really prominent.
You got asters, all different. I mean, there's so many different asters, exactly. But they're showing off as well.
Yeah. No, exactly. And the ironweed is an aster, for that matter. And so is the opposite leaf spotflower I mentioned. And, you know, you'll see huge heaps of that along the riverbanks. Bright yellow flowers. And then, of course, you know, the butterflies are so thick. And the dragonflies, right now, this is the height of the dragonfly season. And again, you know, the dragonflies, they have to live underwater for a year. So they're trying to time hatching out when there's a lot to eat so they can live as long as possible and have sex as much as possible.
Yeah, well.
And so I guess that's what everybody's trying to do.
Yeah, I can't blame them. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just, it sounds like a great plan.
I filmed a dragonfly eating another dragonfly the other day.
Are there dragonflies that are predator? I mean, is it one exactly. kind of one species that predates another, or are they cannibals? Or?
Yeah. Well, they are cannibals, but they're eating other species. So the big one, it was a green darner. It was a male green darner. So that's a big green-bodied dragonfly with a blue tail. And it's one of the biggest dragonflies in Alabama. Yeah, they're huge. They're everywhere. Very common. And it was eating a band-winged dragonfly, which is a black dragonfly that has clear wings with black spots on each wing, like a big black blob, you know. You know what I'm talking about? Do you see those dragonflies?
I do.
Much smaller dragonfly, perhaps two-thirds the size. And so, yeah, this guy was eating that band-winged dragonfly, and where he was hunting, the reason I found this was because I was filming all the band-winged dragonflies because there were so many along this wall of rice on this creek. I mean, there was like, if you took like a 5-foot stretch of the shoreline, there were probably 20 band-winged dragonflies working that little area.
Wow.
The next 5 feet, 20 more. They were just everywhere. And so this guy was just, I think, just cruising through there, picking them off all day long, probably. And he had it upside down and then chewed into its neck, like the joint where its face and neck were, and was just sucking the life out of it like Dracula.
That's I can't wait to see that. Would you post that?
There's
let
a picture
me know.
Of it on my Facebook page right now. There's a still image of it on there right now.
Okay. Well, as soon as I finish the show here, I will go look at it. And speaking of the couple other things you talked about for the fall trips, first of all, I don't want to even start on this because people know I'll go on forever when you talk about Bottle Creek and the mounds and Mississippi and culture right. and why they built there and, you know, this idea that everybody just lived peacefully, peaceably in these polities out there when it was, you know, it was warfare.
They were cannibals.
Yeah.
And not cannibals. They were human sacrificers.
Correct. And
the Mississippian culture stuff.
Well, if you're big money, you're going to get buried. They had to kill people to put them in there with you to serve you in the afterlife. So you didn't want to be caught by them because you got, the chief dies and you get killed and thrown in there so you could serve him in the next realm. Yeah. It's a heck of a story. But then you also mentioned cypress tree. And I think people think they've seen big cypress. Along, you know, they're in the Delta, Middle Delta, whatever. They've seen some big cypress. It's the next level to go see the champion.
Yeah, it is. And it's a redwood-sized tree. And the importance of seeing that tree is understanding what we've lost. So when we did the underwater forest, 70,000-year-old cypress forest, you know, it's 60 feet underwater today. But 70,000 years ago, before humans were in North America, those were the trees. And we found stumps out there 12 feet across. So, you know, fully redwood-sized trees here on the Gulf Coast. And so that big one we go see it's hollow, so that you can knock on it. It sounds like a drum. It's still alive, but it's hollow. And that's what this landscape was. And it's just staggering to imagine. You know, I had an old man on my trip one time who had been going in the Delta in the 30s when his family had a camp on the Raft River. And he hadn't been back. And so I took him back about 10 years ago. And we're going up Crab Creek and he says, this isn't Crab Creek. And I said, yeah, it is. And he said, no, it isn't. Where are the trees? And I said, well, it's always looked like this. Cause in my 20 year experience, it had always been kind of a sparsely forested.
Yes. Small, you know, stems, smaller stems. Trees. Yeah.
Well, that's because it got pulped by the paper mills in the 80s. And so he was seeing the virgin forest that was still there in the 30s and 40s. That's the area that got logged with helicopters in the 70s and 80s, 60s, 70s and 80s. And so it was just a stunning moment to realize, oh my gosh, this landscape that I know so well is not, I'm in a clear cut. I'm in a 50-year-old clear cut. You know, this is, it was just a real moment. So to go see one of these trees, it connects you to what is supposed to be here and what can be here again. Now, that tree is 800 years old, so it'll take a while. But, you know, as we've now got about 300-some-thousand acres of the Delta protected, not going to be logged, it will, you know, we're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger trees going forward and return to that lost ecosystem. But, you know, so much of the Delta we think is pristine. Like if you're running up north of Lower Bryant Landing, there's a house on the left side of the river, belongs mm-hmm. to Mr. Steele mm-hmm. and his family. His wife's family had that island cut and cleared back since the Civil War and farmed 60 acres on that island.
Well, so the Stouders, you know, right there off Raft, I mean, they ran cattle yep. out there. So
exactly. Vince Dooley's grandparents yeah. ran cattle so, right yep. there at Polecat Bay.
Yep.
So the Delta in the lifetimes of our grandparents was full of farms, which just blows my mind, you know.
It's good dirt. Good
yeah,
dirt
yeah,
for farming.
For sure.
That's
Mr.
Absolutely.
Steele said the floods every year, they never had to fertilize.
Yep.
Mother Nature came and fertilized the fields right before planting time every year.
That's 100% true. Hey, it beats what, yeah, you see what fertilizer costs today. It beats it for sure. Hey, can you hold on a second? I got to run to a news break
sure,
and come
sure.
back. All right, more with Ben Raines when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 153 FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. What a nice way to wrap up my Friday here, getting to hang out with all of y'all and my buddy Ben Raines. Which, by the way, underwater forest, are we closer here? I mean, we've got Jerry Carl, I mean, he's going to win in November. He won with 75%. Of the vote on Tuesday.
I hope he puts the bill back in.
Yeah, so we need to push for this. Explain to people what the bill is, just the short version.
So this is a bill to protect the site so people can't steal the wood. Nobody can turn it into tables and chairs and furniture and stuff like that, which Lazy Boy literally was trying to do. And so the bill protects the area where the forest is. You're allowed to fish there. You're allowed to dive there. You're allowed to anchor there. You're not allowed to steal the stuff.
Yeah, don't take
the
stuff. Yeah, you don't take the stuff that we come out to
it's
see, but you get to use it.
Yeah.
You get to
yeah,
fish exactly. and dive and play.
Right. It's a great place to fish, great place to dive. It's beautiful. And so the bill, we got it through the House, and I even went and testified to the Natural Resources Committee at the Capitol, you know. So it passed the House 379-18. Incredible in our fractured political landscape. And then the Senate refused to take it up for a vote. Tommy Tuberville wanted to. I understand that Katie Britt stood in the way of it, is what I've been told.
Huh.
So if you're a Katie Britt, if you have any sway over her, encourage her to understand what it will mean for Alabama, both tourism-wise, be a huge economic impact because we have
I try to look at everything in a balanced way doing what I do. I don't see the other side of it of why you wouldn't
her argument was she didn't want to add anything to the federal government that would end up costing people money.
It's
now,
not
that's a silly argument for this because it's underwater. They're not going to be park rangers,
right?
They're not going to be garbage cans, they're not going to be bathrooms. What it would do is every National Marine, protected area like that, marine sanctuary like this, every one of them comes with federal research money for universities to do research in the National Marine Sanctuary. So the closest ones to us are in the Florida Keys and 100 miles offshore of Texas. And so our Alabama scientists...
Is that Flower Banks?
Flower Banks?
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's 100 miles offshore, you know. So our scientists can't access any of that research money. But here, if we had a National Marine Sanctuary 10 miles from the Sea Lab, our scientists would be able to do all kinds of federally funded research in the Gulf of Mexico in the forest. And it would be a massive win for Alabama, for our universities. That's 22 universities that work at the Sea Lab, 22 Alabama universities. All those scientists would be able to use this federal research money. And it would be a windfall for science, for understanding climate, for and for our research institutions to give them research money to go do the work that needs to be done. You know, that forest is a time capsule. You look at the trees, you can tell what the atmosphere was like 70,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the trees are hundreds of years old, so you can see it changing through time as you work through the cores of the trees. And the same thing with the sediments. They're also a time capsule. As you dig down, you're going down through time. So you can see sea level rise because the forest got flooded, you know, and you can see climatic data about temperature and things. So it would be, you know, I really hope Jerry Crowell gets reelected and puts the bill back in. This would be a big deal for Alabama. The tourism money alone from divers coming to dive on the forest, they come from all over the world.
It's fascinating, and it's something we're going to talk about again. But people, y'all can go watch. If you go to Ben's YouTube page, you could watch this. And I want to ask before we wrap up, flower-wise, I got a bunch of questions. But this person, let me see, unnamed texter. Hey, can you ask Ben, does Indian pink grow down in Baldwin County? The Indian, yeah, I think I know what they're talking about. It's like
a
perennial.
I think I do too, and I believe I see it on the sides of the roads.
Okay.
If it's the plant I'm thinking of. Now, the big thing that they're going to see on the sides of the road coming up right now is the primrose all over Baldwin County. And there's a bunch right now where you get onto the causeway. Yeah, I don't, I'm looking for the Indian pink. I'm thinking there's another plant it may be the same plant that does definitely grow in Baldwin County. It's a little bit paler. You know, it's not quite red. So pink is right. I'm pretty sure that's the same plant.
The red flower with the yellow throat, they were saying.
Yeah, that's kind of the traditional horticulture one. The one I'm thinking of that I think is a relative is pinker. It's dusty. It's sort of it's not quite red and it's not quite pink. And I think it's the same plant, but it doesn't have the yellow.
All right. Well, what we'll do is we'll just text this.
I have to research that.
Okay. We'll get you back on and talk about it. Once again, they want to book a trip. Where do they go?
Go to benraines.org or find me on Facebook, and I'm easy to track down. Rainsorama@gmail.com.
Good stuff, Ben. We'll talk soon, man.
All right.
Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Y'all have a great weekend.